Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. So it's Saturday night, which generally is question and answer night. Is that right? Have I got that right? I'm glad. So do you have any questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Did you find that interesting, the whole talk last night about refuge? Those of you who were there? Yeah, anyone have any questions about that? Clear as mud?
Not totally clear on the refuge tree. If you could just move that again, especially in relation to when we do the refuge prayer, when you're doing like last you mentioned, like the flower, the apple, or the fruit, and the seed.
I actually said it wrong. It should be flower, fruit, and leaves.
Okay.
Yeah. So this, because the fruit is the seed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
The apple.
Right. Was that what your question was?
Well, just an overview of the
the tree itself.
Yeah, the tree itself. Yeah.
I think it's very useful to actually try to visualize trees and pay attention to the energy in your body. For myself, I have found that a very interesting exploration. A tree, as we talked about around Christmas, remember, Morris? A tree is a very powerful symbol. Yeah, a tree is a very powerful symbol. And in most cultures and most traditions, there is this sense of a tree that just doesn't go away. Like it keeps popping up in consciousness. And there is, when you start to, like for example right now, if you just allow yourself to consider a tree, what kind of tree are you considering? Is it an evergreen, or is it, you know, is it deciduous? What is it? What kind of tree have you got? Just a bunch of you say what kind of tree it is. And does it have roots as well as boughs? And is it small or is it big? Some of you have a small tree? No? Okay. And can you sense it in space? All around, or is it sort of like a flat picture?
Space.
And can you have a sense of different branches coming out from it?
Mm-hmm.
Can you have a sense of the leaves moving? And as you're doing that, as you're going more detail into your tree, do you feel more involved with your own body? Hmm? You don't? But I think if you continue working with that, you find that you start to hook up with your own nervous system, with the spine and the brain and the way energies move through your body. And the real refuge is in your own heart, which is a reflection of the real refuge, which is beyond all possibilities, which is a reflection of the real refuge, which is not separate from your heart. So while you're doing the visualization, you're also working in your own being at developing an awareness of the tree that is not separate from you, the tree of life. So you start by visualizing a tree, and you can spend quite a lot of time with that tree if you want to. One of the things about that refuge that we did last night is it has a very nice description of like birds with beautiful songs. And did any of you, when you were young, think that you could understand birds? Or isn't that curious that you would think that? Do you think everybody you knew thought that? I was sure that there was a way I understood birds. And I can remember asking other kids and asking my mother how I could make it more clear. Because I could almost, but it didn't. So I would pretend I could, but there was something about pretending that wasn't the same. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, because it was accepted.
No, that isn't really, I wasn't really thinking in those terms, perhaps, but that isn't really...
Is it self-consciousness that makes you pretend?
No, I don't think so. But I think there's something very interesting in that whole feeling as if there is something in sound that is evoking an understanding. I think that's a very interesting perception. Now being an adult and knowing of becoming analytical about it. And it is very interesting. I remember when I was looking through... Remember it used to be the Star Weekly?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Before your time, most of you just said, young pups here. Puff, puff.
Used to deliver it. Self-confession here, whatever.
Yeah, I was just a kid. I didn't mean it. I delivered it to you. And you didn't give me a tip. One night in the Star Weekly, they had this article about this guy in England or Europe or someplace who had discovered that if you took a plate of metal plate and you put something on it like sand or some thicker viscous thing like honey or different textures of substances, and you took a tuning fork that was electronically hooked up, you know, that, and you stuck the tuning fork with its base on that plate, and you sent sound through the plate, this sound with this material would create this shape and hold it. This shape would be held and stay and continue to circulate. And you turn the sound off and that would just collapse, and then you put a different sound on and it would make a different form. Mm-hmm. And I had like 4 pages of the forms. I was like 14. I cut it out. I kept that with me all the time I hitchhiked around North America, all the time I was living on the streets, God knows where. I must have tucked it because I, you know, all those wild and romantically horrible times of my more desperate period of my life, I kept that article with me. Isn't that curious? What is it about sound? So then after you do the tree, you play with the idea of the birds singing. In the traditional Tibetan Buddhist mythology, the sound of the birds is... There is a heavenly realm which one can access, an altered state of perception, where one sound is equal to a paragraph of explanation. So the song of a bird is a major discourse, but when it's done in sound, it vibrates the understanding right to the listener. So the sound of the bird transforms the consciousness of the hearer to another understanding. So the birds singing their songs are actually represent bodhisattvas. So they're these birds flying around the tree. So not only do you work with the tree and the visualization of that, but you work with a feeling as if you are hearing some kind of other sound, and watch what that does to your ear. These are some ideas about the refuge tree that are worth playing with. Because, as I said, the whole point of taking refuge is to teach yourself to switch your perception. Isn't that how it started? From the ordinary dual perception, from the void of dual perception. Wasn't that the first line, more or less? So that use the usual subject-object perception of, oh yeah, what time is it now? How long is this class going to go on? Is it going to get interesting? You know, that kind of dual perception. Then stop that mind that does that subject-object and look at the space within which it's arising. Now you do that a lot of ways, like just sitting here now, you're looking at me. You can also, while you're looking at me, you can also image that you're looking at the space between you and I. And just switch, and then feel the space on either side of you, and then feel the space behind you. And then feel the space through my body, and then feel the space through your body, because your body's filled with space, right? Then image that from that space there is also another way of seeing. There's a way of seeing just the energy of the cells. Which you can do. It's not difficult to do that. So from the void, because the void, the spacious nature of existence is always present, whatever realm you're in, from the void, allow your habitual state to dissolve and image a state of a refuge tree. And work it as an energy so that you also feel it at the same time. Well, that's kind of interesting to do, don't you think? Mm-hmm. I think so. And this tree has these birds singing. And this sound, you work with, you know, every line gives you a suggestion that you also viscerally explore. But not a big, you know, you don't have to sit there for an hour doing a tree. In a way, maybe that's not true. In a way, you do sit there for an hour doing a tree, if that's what you're interested in. But when you're doing the actual refuge, just like when you're chanting with a group of people together, you don't spend hours over each detail. When you're doing the refuge yourself, you do the whole thing very quickly, and then you have a point where you do the meditation part, and you can take any one of those symbols and take it into greater depth. And that's the way you do those practices. But every one of the images in the text or in any of the prayers is very interesting to explore. Well, first what you do is you teach yourself the formula. E equals MC squared. You teach yourself the formula. And you say the formula and you repeat the formula so that you've got that down. And then you trust yourself to say, okay, what is E? What is a tree? What is the sound of the birds? What is the throne? What is the lotus? And you work with it in a visceral way, too. While you're imaging it, you also watch how your energy moves with that image. Because as there are outer trees, there are inner trees. Am One of the definitions of an arahat is where the inner and the outer are in accord. Is that a reasonable answer? Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Yes, ma'am.
When I did that retreat a few years ago,
in Calgary,
mm-hmm.
when I beat you up and jumped up and down on you, and
but you didn't.
Oh, didn't I?
No.
Oh, come and do another one. You missed the best part.
I had enough beating up. Didn't
oh, okay. That's right. You didn't.
But one of the things that I experienced is it was ati, my beautiful golden bones. My legs were like these images of trees coming out of my legs. I had
the rootedness. Yeah.
My legs were trees.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
It was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't fully understand it until you gave this explanation. And I'm not saying I fully understand.
Yeah.
I have an insight now.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
I had a question from some. It's not really a. Something you were saying yesterday about there's no real self.
No inherent self.
Yeah. So, could you say then that is that the idea that you that what you perceive as being your body is just a construction of your mind?
That wouldn't be true either. There is no inherent self, but there is certainly a process. The body is a function. Do you see that it's a function?
Yeah, yeah.
And as a function, it comes into being, it exists, and it passes away, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Of course, one's own body is not going to do that, but everybody else's is. I basically haven't changed.
But the way that the body manifests to you and to other people is a creation of your.
Most of our sense of what the world is actually a mental construct.
Right.
Most of what we work on in terms of thought is based on what experiences we've already had.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
That was a question I had. It does, but I was thinking.
It's very difficult to actually be here.
Yeah, the way that we sort of. Appear or the way that our body appears to function is a condition of laws of nature. We breathe air, so our face looks like this. We hear sound, so we have So, did the mind create those laws first, and then
again, you're looking for a first case, and in Buddhism, there's this very tricky little way they deal with this. Somebody or other deals with it. It's been a while since I talked about this, so this will be fun, you know. Some people will hear it for the first time, even though I've talked about it 50 or 60 times. There are three realms. There are three realms of reality within which we exist. One of them is the physical realm. Right? And that one has a kind of past, present, future. Right? Now it's sunrise, now it's sunset, now it's 2001. That it's like coming into being, existing, and passing away, and a process. It's more linear. It is extremely important with the physical realm to be ethical. To treat it appropriately means you be ethical. Because if you don't do that, you don't have a good sense of foundation in your life. You feel unsupported. If you do not practice honesty, you don't feel like you're supported. So the physical realm is particularly important to practice ethics. Not to take what isn't freely given, Because if you do that, pretty soon you're sure everybody's going to be stealing from you. Is it true? I don't know how many people have said to me when they are telling me something they've done that they feel guilty about, then sometime or other within the conversation, very often people will say, well, everybody does it. And there's almost a plea in that. Almost like, you know, it must be true because I do it, everybody does it. But the real truth is what you do, you expect to come back to you. So if you would like the world to support you, support the world. That keeps your side of it clean. So this physical realm has a beginning, a middle, and an end. When you were born, when you started grade one, you know, when our relationship began, you know, when I first got this coat, it's very specific. There are beginning points to that. The second realm, and the first realm has six sense doors, which are the five senses, and then the mind door, brain mind door, physical brain, the brain that takes care of the physical realm. So the center for that is here. The seed syllable most used to get in contact with that center in the color is white and om. That's not the color of that center. That's not the sound of that center. But in Tibetan Buddhism in particular, and in a lot of the Hindu tradition, white and om are very useful colors to enter this area without ripples, without difficulty. Any of the, we call them chakras, you call them centers, any of the chakras are all colors, all sounds, or no color, or no sound. And this is a good key for moving in here. The next body that you have is called energy, life energy. Emotions are energy, aren't they? And it isn't linear, it's more like a globe. Is this beginning to sound familiar to some of you? Jeez, that's great. And so, for example, if you talk about it in terms of emotion, if you're depressed, what do you remember? Do you remember the times you were happy? What do you remember? All the reasons why you might as well stay depressed. And when you're in love, hi. Oh, what's wrong with you? Gotta go now. You remember all the stores where they have cutesy things, right? You don't hang out in the gutter, do you? You're in love. When you're sad, when you're angry, have any of you had this happen, that you get angry and then you find yourself bringing things that happened like 20 years ago forward? Is this anybody in this room ever done? Because this body, when you're working with one emotion, it hooks to all that emotion in time and space. It's one body of that energy. Which is also why, if you're sitting in a room minding your own business and somebody comes in who's really angry, you can feel it. What's wrong with you? Or if somebody comes in who's in love, you can feel it. Oh, you're very happy. They don't even have to say anything, do they? You can feel it, can't you? Because this body is like a globe. It's like an ocean. You know, of course, that in this world there is only one ocean and extends from the atmosphere right through your lungs with the water in your lungs to the lakes and rivers and the raindrops. You know this, don't you? There is really only, there's this circling water, but only one ocean. And sometimes it appears this way and sometimes it appears that way. That's very like this body. So when you have an emotion, it's not my emotion. It's an emotion which is moving through this particular area, and I don't deal with it well. That's what you're having. You're having your difficulty swimming in the ocean. You have self-clinging when this oceanic feeling is coming up. So what you do, what you want to know about this body is that it has a different sense of time. Its sense of time is the every memory of when you have had the similar emotion. Because they travel in schools, right? Or in, you know, currents, right? Here comes a current from, you know, Japanese trade current here coming up. And it all is this taste. Oh, now this one has this taste going this way. Does that make sense to you? And that body has three sense doors, which are? Sight, sound, and mind. I thought you were starting to remember it here. Sight, sound, and mind. And that body extends, there are form realms, desire nature, desire realm, beings that have such bodies. This physical body, it only is what's called the desire realm, beings who have bodies in the desire realm. This body is also desire realm, but it also moves into fine material realm. That is to say, purely energy bodies, what we would call, you know, some of the lower forms of angels. If we were going to use those terms, elementals, things like that, so this body allows that communication also with any energy. It's called the speech body because it communicates. Neat, huh? The three sense doors are sight, sound, and mind. Which, as you've heard me say many times, maybe you remember this. If you've ever looked at those pictures of angels on Christmas cards, what are they doing? They're hanging around, playing harps, and radiating light.
Right, sparkling.
Yeah. Sight, sound, and mind. Aren't they? Well, that's pretty accurate. And that's exactly what the speech body does. It radiates, and you receive it. You know, a wave comes in, and your body waves with it. And if you get along well with it, no problem. If it's an aspect of your own ocean that you haven't dealt with and you do not want to, you really dislike that in somebody else. I don't know why they always do that. Because they're vibrating what you don't want to know about. But really, if you're going to be a human being, you have to taste the 100,000 joys and the 100,000 sorrows. Not cling to them. You know, they're all going through. Just let them be. So that's that realm. And it doesn't have a beginning point. It is just this endless dance of energy. It has a kind of time, but the time is more, oh, now this wave is moving. It's more a use of, it's more a globe. And you know, there are cultures on this planet whose conversation, whose language is structured in a globular way. Did you know that? I very much love language, and so whenever I get a chance, I usually read these periodicals about language and studying different kinds of language. And there's this group of people who live in Africa somewhere, I can't remember their name unfortunately, whose language, like if three people are standing there together and they're making a meal, that would be one word to describe that. And if one of them leaves and there's only two, that's another word. Because the energy has shifted. And their whole language is based on the energy, not on linear. English is mostly about a subject and a predicate, right? Subject, object, and what you did with it, or what it did with you, or it's very linear. And how your language works, it also affects how you tend to think is right. How you feel sane. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So the third body is boundless, beyond form. It has two attributes. One is clarity, and the other is void nature. Its brain is here, which is where your heart is if you're a Buddhist. So this is body, this is speech, and this is mind. This is mind. It is boundless. It has clarity, that is, it can reflect anything. So you can get caught in your own reflections. Which is what we do, which is what you're talking about.
So
but really, the state is boundless.
So is there a hierarchy than the mind?
Yeah, this is the hierarchy. If you treat all three, if each, all three of those bodies are present in all beings, if as a human being, for the physical realm, you treat it with appropriateness, for the emotional realm, if you treat it with appropriateness, for the mental realm, if you treat it with appropriateness, then that creates a fourth body, which in Buddhist terms is called liberation from suffering. So you do not deny cause and effect. Oh no. Oh no. Cause and effect is riding the waves of energy which are not separate from void nature. And form is not separate from void nature. And void nature is not separate from form. Is that good?
That's good.
Morris?
I'm getting a certain feeling about it. I hadn't heard or seen it before. Sense that this is the body center, and the energy is moving out, but it's connected to a whole vast field. It's not localized in me.
It's not personal.
I'm connected with the whole surround, that certain type of emanation or vibration that lasts a hold of it.
To really perceive that is the work of elements. Meditation on the elements brings one directly into the understanding of the universal nature of the personal body.
The universal nature, I'm trying to...
The universal nature of the personal body.
Work for the elements.
That is the way that is done. Working with the elements is, you know, the meditations on the elements are so beautiful to do. And I don't know whether you ever get to the end of them.
And then it comes with an emotional body. Yeah.
But you can't separate the three bodies anyway.
Well, you speak of them as a strong. How's that way? The Dhamma guy, the Buddha guy.
That's when it's an awakened state. That's when it's not subject. That's when it's operating, and it is perceived not subject to duality. When you look at body, speech, and mind without being subject to duality, without self-referencing, what you're looking at is Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, Nirmanakaya. That's right. But that is not Nirmanakaya, Sambhogakaya, Dharmakaya if the perceiver is subject to self-referencing.
Has to be in that state.
Yeah. That is the symbol of Dharmakaya. It's the symbol of it. And it's a koan, it's a question. Because somewhere in your being, you are not separate from that. But it's not the self-referencing mind that will find that place.
Well, I think of the Dharmakaya.
But you can use the self-referencing mind to get you there.
Yeah.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
The Dharmakaya is the base energy of everything. Is it not?
No. No. The ground of being. Yeah, that's a different thing altogether. That's called Dharma Dhatu. That's not the same as Dharmakaya.
No. I still have the Dharmakaya as the base energy.
Well, congratulations.
I can't get my mind off of that.
Excellent. Congratulations. I won't even try. I congratulate you on that.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding. I mean, if you're happy with it, I'm happy for you.
Well, that's the only sense I can get out of it.
Good. Dharmakaya is the truth body. The law body.
I find it tricky moving around with the word body.
Mm-hmm. Kaya formation, okay. Kaya formation?
No, the field, not the energy field. Energy field.
No, energy field is Sambhogakaya.
Right. And then the truth body is the Dhammakaya. Truth is abstract word.
In this case, it means that which cannot be disproved. That's the kind of truth it means. So it's similar to the unborn. That which has no beginning, no end, is pointing to the boundless nature. It's the nature of non-different, nothing to differentiate, no discrimination, no conditioning. Dharmakaya is the truth body because it is kind of like the high priestess in tarot. She is a virgin because there's nothing you can add to her that could make her impure because she's not separate from anything. That quality of totality, non-differentiation, non-exclusion.
Another thing I was thinking of, reminded of when you were discussing inherent nature or something. So I might have mentioned Kala Rinpoche. He said something in the book on the Dharma. That you can search the entire universe, but you cannot find anything that has itself nature. There's nothing out there with a self nature that's going to do anything to you. Everything, something that appears there, phenomena, owes its existence. It's only temporary existence to something else.
It's a function, not an object.
And it's moving all the time.
Remember when Buckminster Fuller said God is a verb?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Everything's moving.
Exactly. It's a function, so not an object.
There's no self-nature.
Yeah.
Thing there.
Yeah. There are no objects, there are functions.
There's no inherent nature here.
Function. There's a function. It's a verb.
I heard the definition for God, good orderly direction.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you. Yeah.
You titled the book Dharmakaya and Sambhogakaya. I come across the word Nirmanakaya in some of the sadhanas were in the Chenrezig. Is that the physical realm, Nirmanakaya? Is that
yeah.
What you first did?
Yeah, Nir, not, man, not mind. Mm-hmm. The not mind formation. Oh yeah. Oh no.
I thought I'd take a shot.
Good move. Caught me totally by surprise.
So that's the physical, the Manikaya being the physical realm, Sambhogakaya being the energy realm, and Dharmakaya
the truth body.
Yeah, I was thinking more like unconditional love is another. Would that be something like a kind of like something that's, I working with the sadhanas and in the teaching, I keep coming across this aspect of compassion and love and sort of questioning what is real love and in its purest sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of just sort of played with it for a while and expanded mm-hmm. my mind with mm-hmm. the concept a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone was to ask me to describe what God would be, I'd have to say unconditional love.
Beautiful.
Untouchable, unprejudiced, all embracing.
Mm-hmm.
No differentiating.
Mm-hmm.
Simply is. And it's a far away concept. But
no, it's not a far away one, is it? It's not far away. It's very real
it
to you.
It appears that way at times.
It's very real to you. Yeah. Well, yeah, you know. Yeah, like you mean you're not perfect all the time?
Yeah, or you have a disgruntled day or people. Yeah,
well, like, you know. And still there is that view. And
yeah.
Still that is your aspiration. Yeah. Whether it's a cloudy day or not does not change the fact that the sun is shining.
Correct.
So you can either be impressed by the clouds or you can realize, gee, that's interesting how the sunlight looks through the clouds.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. You were mentioning
and
earlier.
That's where you need to keep your focus, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Enough. Because you were mentioning earlier about how, at least speaking like myself, I find that one of my major stumbling blocks is the projection of those past events that I still hold on to. I've discovered a really in-depth anger that I don't know what I'm angry at, but it's there.
Sure.
All those years of history, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's very painful to sort of overcome it. You're just mad and you're angry.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody was to ask you why, you wouldn't be able. You just get more angry because they're asking you. You know, because you have got no answer for it, and just
yeah.
sit with it, as you're saying, watch it pass away.
Yeah.
And replace it with something else. I find it can be very difficult sometimes.
It's very difficult.
Start creating dramas inside your head.
Oh.
Adding to it.
Don't we love our movies?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And collecting evidence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Best director.
Yeah.
Blaine. Best actor.
Accept this award.
Blaine. Best supporting role. Blaine.
Yeah.
It'd be a great book to do, right? Mm. Not a cartoon book.
Yeah, it's
bring it the Oscars as a meditation retreat. Are you sitting there and giving themselves the Oscar?
Yeah.
Interesting comment on that, but the anger that you have is worse than what gave you the anger.
Oh, the anger you have is worse than what gave you the anger.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
And
you stop
with the anger and let it free itself.
Anger usually is a reaction to a feeling of helplessness,
yeah.
to a feeling of loss,
yeah.
to a feeling of fear, any of the feelings that tend to wash one away,
yeah.
then anger comes up because anger picks a point. There's this object, then there's a subject. Then you pull yourself out of the pain, right? Anger is very useful for people who get caught in depression, isn't it? You know, because, you know, it's easier to get angry than to feel like your whole being is going to be washed away. For a lot of people, don't you think that's true, Morris? I know that's true.
Becoming vulnerable.
And the problem with anger is all those damn corpses. All the damn corpses after you've had your little blowout, you know, and having to call the ambulance and, you know, and resurrect your relationships. You run out of band-aids, you have to, you know, buy your own bandage factory. And like the kind of upkeep after anger is so profoundly difficult and so painful. So that for a long time after you're angry, you go through this feeling of like really feeling remorse, don't you, after anger? Really remorse. You know, first of all, you justify it for as long as possible because you don't want to go into the remorse, right? So you justify it and you really find more reason to be, and then finally do that horrible thing. So you make amends when you don't want to. Then pretty soon you're making amends and you're starting to feel really put upon. So then pretty soon you're collecting evidence again. And you're starting to feel like, you know, like, well, and then pretty soon somebody asks you to do something, and then, you know, the explosion happens, and then the corpses are littering the landscape again. And you try not to come down again from that anger because you're going to have to deal with all those, and then eventually you have to. And then you start making amends. Is it true that anger is cyclic? Have you plotted that? Have you watched that? Whole cycle. The wrong time to stop wish to address anger is when you're blowing up. It's hard to do it when you're collecting evidence. A really good time to do it. A really good time to start saying, wait a minute, is there something familiar about this pattern? Is just when you start to want to make amends. Because you're actually doing something that's very useful. You're surrendering to something bigger than you. So it's a really good time to start to address it. And not just to be sorry for that person, but to say to yourself, do I have other choices? I have done this before. What else can I do? I do not want to see this again. Is there something else I can do here? And you're not going to address it. You know, my beloved teacher, Namgyal Rinpoche, said to me many years ago, you know, Cecily, if a soldier is in the front line of the war firing his gun, it's not a good time to ask him if he likes his job. And you know, I got it. It's not a good time, is it? Because you got all that frustration built there. So yeah, you can't sit with the anger then. But you can see it building before that point. You can see it building just after you've done the remorse and just before you start collecting evidence. That's the really optimum time to catch it. And basically, you know, what is it that you don't want to pay attention to until you get angry in your environment? What is it that you don't want to know about inner or outer environment? No, wait. And basically, that's a really good question. Do you think that could be a good question? Mm. what is it that you don't want to have to deal with, look at, pay attention to, care for, admit you don't know? What is it you're trying to ignore? And if you ask that question at that point two or three times, you will be really happy with the result, honestly. It doesn't feel like it now. But it really will be a relief for you. It's not anything you don't already know. It's just you're afraid of knowing it.
When you say that, you know, that when the anger is there, it's sort of most, you know, intense moment. If you became aware of it right now, if you're aware, you know, you were conscious of that, would that be?
That would be really helpful, but it's very, don't expect yourself to be. If you're just starting to do this work, after you've done some work, yeah, you should be able to catch it and say, no, wait a minute, I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. But if this is a pattern that's been going on in your life for a long time, I wouldn't make any big vows, I'm never going to do this again. Because then that's just going to create more of the wheel.
The reason I'm asking, it sounded sort of like aversion to, you know, it's like it's this anger is something that you've got aversion to and you're trying to push it away. Or,
mm-hmm.
or,
yeah.
I mean, not that it's good to act on it, but it's not, the anger itself is not really the powerful thing.
No, oneself is the powerful thing. Mm-hmm. And how to put oneself in that position by realizing it's a choice, anger is a choice. And to see what causes one to go into that cycle is probably the easiest way to do it, I think. Once you've done that a little bit, then it's not going to get to the point of the rage. You'll catch it before that. You'll watch yourself ignoring and watch yourself collecting evidence. You'll say, wait a minute, what am I doing here? Do I want to do anger? You can get it a lot sooner. The other thing you can do if anger comes up suddenly, if you've done a little bit of work with Tibetan Buddhism, you can name it as it is. Oh, here's Akshobhya Buddha. Oh, here is the great Buddha Akshobhya, whether it's the outer or inner, doesn't matter. This is consciousness. Consciousness embracing water. Consciousness and the consort of water. This is Akshobhya. Anger is Akshobhya. Anger is consciousness. And what is consciousness doing here? Trying to argue with a mirror. Mirror like wisdom. If you've done a little bit of work, you can do it that way. You can look at that and say, oh, here is Akshobhya Buddha, and, you know, bow. But I think you need probably to teach yourself that you have more than the choice of anger before you can trust that you'd be able to do that. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking that seems to be a critical point. Is to simply acknowledge that you are angry and not tamp it down. It seems there's a great trouble seems to come when we store up anger and never face it. There may be a time when to do it. And that's a different technique for dealing with it. But I think that if I catch myself being angry, I've been running away from anger all the time. I tamp it down. I'm creating an anger in your consciousness. It's ready to pop up. I'm allowing the seed to emerge. If I just catch it without any particular shame or fear,
and just treat it as energy, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I can catch it.
That's excellent.
And just say, oh.
That's excellent.
Really discomfort. Sometimes working at the moment with dreams.
That's excellent. That's excellent.
And just catch it.
That's right.
And don't let it get into a tizzy.
Absolutely.
It would be time to go through the things that you're talking about. Working with different awareness of how it arises and what it's connected with.
Is that what you heard me saying? That once you go into how it arises and what it's connected with? Because that isn't what I thought I was saying. Maybe I'm not expressing myself very well.
Maybe I inferred that.
Sorry?
I may have inferred that.
If I may have. That isn't what I mean to say. I'm not interested in analysis. I'm interested in whether or not one has a choice. Where does something start? It starts from the very no beginning. Which lifetime? Which mother? Which father? Which war? Which rape? Which murder? Which beating? Which blessed love affair? Which great moment of ecstasy? What have you not tasted in the lifetimes of existence? There's no point in going after the first cause. I think that's like the most futile. The only reason for going after understanding the pattern is so that you realize you're sane. But then if you keep doing that, next thing you know, you're starting to try to affix blame, and you have created a really good self who has become a victim. So now you have self caught in the conceit of being hard done by. You know? And so then you're saddled by that. And then the only people that are going to relate to you are people who either are going to do you hard by so that you can prove you're right, or people who really want to help people who are hard done by. You know, so all your friends basically suck. Because they're not the least bit interesting. You know, they're all either a bunch of bleeding hearts, or, right? So I don't recommend that way of going. I just want to clearly make sure that you, that if I did suggest that you should want to know the reason for something happening, that's like very important for kindergarten to know that you're sane, or as sane as anybody who is an enlightened can be. That's very useful. But according to the Buddha, everybody who isn't awakened is mad. Mad, crazy, a basket case. So we're in good company. Here we are all together. So like, it's not a question really of finding the cause. The only reason you want to find the cause is to understand it's a pattern. When you understand it's a pattern, you can understand it has a cause for arising. When you understand something has a cause, you realize you can do something about it. If you are basically not penetrable by life, then how these things keep happening to me must be because some God ordained it. Right? Whereas if you can see, gee, this is a pattern, this has happened before, how does it happen? Oh, I see, I'm ignoring this and I'm trying to do that. I wonder what would happen if I didn't do that. Oh, geez, the whole thing changes. Cause and effect is real. And my choices make a difference. All right. My beloved teacher, Namgyal Rinpoche, one time came and we were somewhere in England, and he disappeared. And he came back looking like, you know how sometimes he looks like a little boy? Like pleased with himself? Like pleased with himself? And he comes back, and he's looking like pleased with himself. And he says, well, it took me a little while, but I did it. What did he do? He found which stone to move and place where so that a whole stream changed its direction going down a hill. That's profound. Actually, he told me about that. I didn't see it. That's profound. That's what you want. That's why you want to know a cause. You want to know what parent did what when, because then you say, okay, this was cause. Now what would I like to do? If cause and effect is real, what causes would I like to bring into being? That's called arising yoga. That's called, this is the meditation on Cheng Rezi. I'm imaging these things arising and it will affect my life and the lives of all beings because I'm doing it for the benefit of all beings. That's the only reason. I mean, it's so murky going in there, who did what to who. Like, what horrible things have not happened to all of us sometime, somewhere, someplace? I remember one time at a retreat center, two people arguing at the base of the steps of a particularly nice cabin. Who was the sickest? So that they could stay there. Something about that just struck me as off. Don't you know? Maybe it's just me, you know? But like, is that a criteria? Who deserves it the most? Or is the criteria, what do I wish to do for the benefit of all beings? What's the criteria here? How I am victimized by anger, or do I have the intelligence to see how else I could use my energy? What's more interesting? Well, I don't know about you guys. But I know which one I would rather do.
Doesn't therapy, or the, you know, therapy as we now know it.
Well, now that could be a whole other. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, but, keep going.
But spend time on that, though. Like you go see your local neighborhood shrink.
And it's very important.
You went through it, you got your neuroses, and you go, well, mom did this or dad did this.
It's very important. It's very important to clearly perceive the cause and effect from the point of view of self. And then after that, then you have to see we're all selves. Not just me. Do you understand? That's what I'm saying. Because what you can do with that is you get caught in that identity.
A victim
or of somebody who needs a little extra help. Or, do you understand? And we all need a little extra help. The problem with self-clinging and self-referencing is that the only way out of it is for you to surrender. And if you're hard done by, you're not going to surrender, you're going to demand payment. You know, there are three conceits, isn't that what we said?
Yes.
What? I am inferior, I am superior, I am equal. All three of them. People who have never been ill are healthy, no problem. Just as much of a conceit. I know lots of people who tell me how healthy they are. I've never had any problems, they say. And I figure that's a problem, don't you? I would figure that would be a big problem. That's like not being able to feel pain or something. That could be fatal.
I didn't follow that. Wouldn't that be, I mean, it could be...
If you can't feel pain?
No. If somebody says that I haven't any problems... It could be that they're just not identifying with the things that are happening as being personal.
Maybe they're identifying with themselves as being somebody who is always good and doesn't have problems.
Sure.
And so then they're caught in self-referencing. So I think that's a problem.
It's an idea about themselves. It's a conception.
Just your friendly neighborhood.
I mean, you know, from my point of view, the First Noble Truth seems to be universal. The first noble truth is what?
Suffering.
There is suffering. There is suffering. Now, some of us know that and think it is only happening to us. Some of us know that and think it happens to us, but we're so good we get out of it right away, and it's your problem that you don't, you poor slob. And some of us think it never happens to us. Three conceits, right? But when the Buddha was, I mean, that's so brilliant. Can you imagine what that guy did? Like, he sat there and perceived suffering on grand and small levels and just sat there with awareness of it. His little mind didn't go dancing around and try to find a way out of it. Dress it up or say, well, if, you know, I gave enough money to the Tibetan refugees, then, you know. He just said, look, this seems to be true. Can you do that? You know, you turn on the TV or what? You know? It's very hard. That is probably the most profound thing I ever heard when I heard that the Buddha said that. What a way to start a religion. Hey, have I got, loosen up, step right up here, have I got a deal for you. This is my new religion. Here's the first tenet. There is suffering. Oh, jeez, I think I'll go over there. Yes, what?
Well, I just, is it, okay, is it enough to say, like I said, when the Buddha said there's suffering and it's no use chasing after the cause, like, when there's a house on fire, you don't find the cause of the fire.
No, he never said there's no use chasing. He said suffering has cause.
No, there
it
is.
Does have cause.
Yeah.
And so that's what you do with therapy. You find out there is a cause, but then you don't try to make that yourself. Because then the next noble truth is what? I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Carry on.
I guess it's just in the sense of trying to get an understanding of the fact that there is what Buddhism says, how to deal with that suffering, and that is the fact is that you acknowledge that there is suffering and how to get out of it, you know, as opposed to you saying that it's not necessary or that you go back and look at the what happened, let's say, in your childhood, or it's sort of like the air was there, let's pull it out. Rather than say, well, my God, somebody over there, he shot me, and that's why he shot me, and the entire arrow is still sitting there, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to...
And I have somebody who's been shot, and his arrow came from...
Yeah, as opposed to just pulling it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to get a greater saying between the two, because that's one way of dealing it, right? Just identifying it, that there's suffering, and then let's get on.
But that isn't it. The four noble truths are not the same thing as there is suffering and there is a cessation of suffering. Four noble truths are different. Do you remember them?
Four noble truths? Yeah.
What are they?
When there's suffering, the cause of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the inevitable path.
Right. So it's different. That's very different. It says there is dissatisfactoriness. There is suffering.
Yes.
There is a cause for suffering.
Yes.
At that point, it's very useful to do therapy for some people.
Okay.
To understand that, to realize it's a cause. It's not like I said, because some malevolent God just... It used to be a joke going around in the 50s. Do you remember that one? This guy, all this horrible stuff happened to him, and he's finally like one more blow, and then one final blow, and he says, God, why are you doing this to me? And the clouds part, right? Remember that? The big finger comes down at the sky, and he says, why? Because you pissed me off, that's why. You know, it's not like that.
Yeah.
And that's what you want to see. You want to see that there... Nothing arises without cause.
Mm-hmm.
Once you understand that, if you want, you have some power. Whatever is caused ceases. It's impermanent.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. So if the suffering continues for a long time, what could this mean?
Oh,
Have you had the same relationship 20 times in a row?
Let me see.
And then there is something you can do, the Eightfold Path. Yeah.
So then how does that relate to the energy body? When you're talking about, you know, what an experience of emotion being connected to all experiences of the emotion.
And what? How does that relate to there is suffering?
Okay, if you have, you're talking about cause and effect, then Steve said if you are continuing this effect, then you're continuing the cause.
If the effect continuously arises, and it is caused by conditions, then somehow or other you might want to be more interested in what you're ignoring, because maybe you are part of the conditions that allow it to continue.
You said that, you know, say great happiness in a particular situation that connects to all great happinesses that you felt. So there's this large...
There is a tendency for it to do that, if you're unconscious.
Okay, that's...
And that's yeah, exactly. If you're unconscious, when you're depressed, why bother being anything else? Because we identify with those states. Do you understand that? We identify with the emotional states. Don't we identify with the emotional states? And... But really, they are just arising and falling, like currents in the ocean. It used to be when I was at do a retreat at this place called the Dharma Center of Canada, which is this acreage, several acres. How many acres is it? 400 acres. In mid-northern Ontario. Beautiful area. If you like swamps, mosquitoes, and rocks. And no, it's a very beautiful area. And I would do retreats there, and then I would come back to Trauma, Ontario. Heard of it. And I would be walking along the street, and I would be just minding my own business, having just... doing a walk along the street, and I would feel this kind of sexual energy. And I'd look up, and there'd be a couple of teenagers walking by. And I'd feel this kind of anger, and, you know, there'd be somebody yelling at somebody else. You know, like, and just watch it. Just watch it. It just comes, and it just goes. Or you can use it as a prayer. This is anger. Many people are feeling angry right now. You know, they don't know they're not alone in it. They actually believe that they are angry. They don't know that it is just an energy moving through. Right? You can use it as a prayer, or you can identify with it. There are all these different emotional states going around. What one does with them is one's choice. Anger, when you use it well, becomes intelligence. That's neat. Jealousy, if you want to work with it really well, becomes the ability to see the activity of awakening moving everywhere. Because jealousy makes you super sensitive to what they are doing, doesn't it? Whereas if you see everything as Buddha nature, then you see the Buddha awakening everywhere. It's just an energy, but when it's self-referencing, it's a poison. If it is just the energy of consciousness moving toward awakening, then it becomes a wisdom. Anger grasps at duality, or consciousness is reflecting one's own perception. But what appears out there is dependent on the eye that is looking, or the heart that is looking. Just a minute, Morris. Just settle down there. I'm trying to talk to the woman behind you here, okay? Does this make sense to you? Is it sort of answering your question then? So that you are able to feel, but you have to actually be able to feel yourself before you can act that way. And in order to feel yourself, you have to forgive yourself. And if you're going to forgive yourself, you might as well forgive all those other suckers too. You know, because then it's easier. So then you realize there's no difference between me or anyone else. So then already there has been, here is the personal individual in the ocean and not being separate in it, as I feel everybody else feels. So already two of the bodies are operating pretty good. Already you have a better chance. That is this beautiful Leonard Cohen poem. I wonder how many people in this city live in furnished rooms. Late at night, when I go to the window, I swear I see a face staring back at me from every other window. And when I turn around, I wonder how many of them go back to their desks and write this down. I misquoted it badly, but that's certainly the essence of it. It's in the, if you want to check it out, it was in the Spice Box of Earth, that book. Yes. Morris.
Sorry about that. It's got a flash.
You get so excited and it's got to come out right away.
No, I just had a...
You make this bump in the room. You see the sparks shooting off him when he's like, oh, it's cut.
Well, kind of a,
it's like you want to stop and just watch the fireworks, don't you?
Sparks seem to have a flash.
Yes, you had a hot flash. Some of us think that's funnier than others. Yes?
The anger. Many instances from looking at the world performing, somebody being angry in the street, somebody doing something else, judging it, instead of accepting the world as it is.
Absolutely.
That's
very beautiful. That's exactly right. Exactly.
Hallelujah,
my darling. That's beautiful. Isn't that beautiful? Because that's exactly what anger is. According to the Buddha, anger arises when desire is interrupted.
We want it to be other than it is.
We want something to be other than it is. That's desire. We want something, and it's other than it is. That's desire interrupted. When desire is interrupted, anger arises. Desire is basically, when desire is not interrupted, we basically go into a kind of a sleep state. When we're getting what we want to, we just kind of dull right out, don't we? And just glide along. And then the light turns red. Interrupted desire brings anger. When we would like to just be dull, and then we have to pay attention to something, we want to just think about what we want to think about, we don't want to actually be here, then we get angry. Right? He was pretty smart, that Buddha guy, eh? Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? I like question night, do you? No questions about your practice?
When you're talking about the heart center, it has two aspects, void nature and
can't remember the other.
Well, sometimes it's called. Usually it's called clarity and knowing, or luminosity and knowing.
And then you said getting caught in your own reflections.
Yeah.
And how does that relate to mirror, like wisdom, or are they?
But this is mind body. And what I'm talking about when I'm saying consciousness, I'm talking about an aspect of mind. There's a difference between consciousness and mind. But there isn't in English. But if you're talking Buddhist, there's a difference. Consciousness is an aspect of mind. It's like the naming consciousness. There are different aspects of mind. The mind of the mind-body is boundless. Consciousness is a naming thing. In order to name, you have to separate. If there's separation, it's boundary. Right? Like, for example, when you're thinking about something, it's after the fact. If I'm saying something and you find it very compelling, you're not thinking, are you? It's just like totally absorbed. And then 1 minute later, you say, wait a minute. Then there's different kind of consciousness, isn't there?
Yes.
So that kind of consciousness is called vijnana. V-I, Spanish N, Spanish N-A-N-A. In Sanskrit, V-I-J, Spanish N-A-N-A. Vijnana or vijnana. And that kind of consciousness is the consciousness that awakens and perceives just this, just this, just this, and gets angry. That naming consciousness gets angry because of the duality. Because there is either desire where everything is happy, or there's something that just isn't going right. What was your question?
You were talking about the mind center and the two aspects. One was void nature.
I actually named them wrong, so thank you. Luminosity and knowing are the actual names of them. In translated names.
And then you said you can get caught in your own reflections.
You can get caught in your own reflections in terms of consciousness, not of mind.
Okay. All right. Good. How does that tie in with the concept of mirror-like wisdom?
Mirror-like wisdom is how you get caught in your own reflections when you're self-referencing.
Okay.
If you're grasping a permanent self, if you're caught in conceit and you see your own reflections, you get pissed off at them. You get caught in them and you say, I really don't like when... I don't like the way, and I really can't stand people who always agree with me. Right? But you're totally unconscious to the fact that your mother, father, sister, brother, aunt, uncle, great nephew, whoever, trained you as you were a very young tad to ever always nod whenever they said anything. So you don't even know that when you're sitting there talking to somebody, you're always nodding, right? But when somebody else comes along and does that, all of the anger from your childhood of your having to learn to do that keeps getting pressed. So you see that person and they start talking to you and you walk away and you say, that person, I can't stand the way they always like try to get me to agree with them, or, you know. Dude, they're so dumb. Why is her? Meaning, all the times I was forced and manipulated into that, I hate it! But not seeing the reflection of yourself. Not seeing the world say, yeah, this is one way you have learned to shape the world as yourself. Here is a God that you have made. How do you like it? Does that make it clear?
It's coming.
Once more? Or is that good?
Well, yeah, it's still...
Okay.
If you're saying that.
If you consider that the entire of the world is a mandala that reflects you, you are the center of the mandala at all times. There is a beautiful course given by two people. I think it's still given. It's called Life as a Waking Dream. Isn't that lovely? And what you do is you take any event, like sitting here in this class, yeah, you write it out and you pretend it's one of your dreams, and all of the aspects of sitting in this class are all aspects of your own consciousness. Well, because it's true. That's mirror-like wisdom.
Understand.
It certainly blows a hole in separateness, doesn't it? Everything is a reflection.
What I'm seeing and what somebody else is seeing comes from within themselves.
Now, you have to be very careful here, because the language here requires a little bit of care, because there are two extremes that are false. One of them is that there is a permanent self. The other is that there is no reality to the material world. And they are both extremes. They're both wrong. So you have to be very careful here. And I want to make that very clear when we're going here. Okay? Is that clear? Mm-hmm. Now I'll ask your question again.
I don't know how to put it. I can feel it.
Now that's interesting, isn't it? Is that a mirror or something? And what is the reaction to that mirror? Are you open to the reaction?
Yeah.
Is there a part of you that doesn't want to be open to it?
I don't think so.
Good.
It's interesting because I can't, there are no words for that understanding.
Good.
Yeah.
And then one looks at, well, is there a need? And then is there movement?
Yeah, that's what I'm feeling, is a shifting.
Yeah. Yes.
I just had this picture in my mind of all of these village people around me, and they are all part of my world and part of my childhood and my history and whatever. And maybe a lot of things they do irritate me, because I know that's how I would be if I had stayed there. But I'm also part of their world. And I irritate them because they see what would have happened if they had left there. Mm. But they are characters in my world. I'm a character in their world. But there are different movies going on, and we're different characters. And it's not one movie and one director.
lovely.
So we're in different worlds, but we're characters in the same play.
Mm-hmm. And then at that point, one says, all of us desire to be free of suffering. It's
true.
That's
how you get out of it.
Yeah. All of us desire to be free of suffering. Myself, this person, this person, this person. What is the way? All of these activities, whether one goes, whether one stays, whether one renovates the house, whether one doesn't renovate the house, all of those things aren't going to make any difference. There's the strongest thing is there is this desire to be liberated from suffering. What is the path to liberation? You start asking that. Now you can see there's no difference, inner, outer.
It's letting go. It's letting go.
That's right, it is. That's exactly what it is.
So it's not important who is the director, or if it's the same movie, or if they're the same characters. It's all really not.
It all is the same movie, and it all isn't the same movie. Every movie is unique. There will never be particularly who you are. You are very specific, unique, profoundly beautiful manifestation of existence. It's a one-time deal, just like this. Never will the world be perceived as you perceive it. The tastes, the smells, the touches, never. The uniqueness, the profundity of that. And we are all, in a way, the same. Coming into being, existing, passing away. Now caught in this, now caught in that. What is the way of? Buddhism is called the middle way. It's very nice for you to consider that. I spent a lot of time just working with that definition. What does that mean, the middle way? Traditionally, the quickie answer to that is neither nihilism nor eternalism. Well, that's a quickie that's really nice to explore. It's 9 o'clock. I'll go with you tomorrow. Are you leaving right away, Terry? I'd like a word with you.
Sure. Okay.
10:30, puja?
Yep.
We're going to do a different puja. Did the text reappear?
The text will be here tomorrow morning. They're ready.
It's going to be all Tibetan, and we're going to do it with a tape, so it'll be really fun. It'll push all your buttons, those of you who like to have an intellectual understanding before you move over a line. See what you do with just sound and vibration. And there is an extremely beautiful gold light in your hearts. And it moves through your whole body, pours out through your pores. Above, below, in front, behind, right, left, four quarters. Someone you want to pray for, just image them being washed by the light. It goes boundlessly out. Wherever there's suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, and mind, is temporarily assuaged, and you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is no suffering. Thank you for your great compassion.